Hello and welcome to Sound Body, a weekly program of information on health topics and ideas that can help you live life to its fullest. I'm Louise Craig. Of course, it seems like a good idea for drug companies to donate to medical charities, helping people with rare conditions pay for drugs, and sometimes for health insurance itself. But maybe it's not all that charitable on the part of the drug company. That is the focus of today's article from the Washington Post titled, Mother, Wife, Million Dollar Patient. No more introduction is needed, so let's just dive right in to the piece written by Carolyn Y. Johnson. The swelling attacks come on without warning. Lakeisha Olive McCoy's lower lip puffs up, then her cheeks and jaw twist and pull, distorting her face into an involuntary grimace. Sometimes her tongue will fill up the back of her throat and choke off her breathing. Olive McCoy, 44, has hereditary angioedema, HAE, a life-threatening disease so rare that many doctors have only read about it. Fortunately, there are cutting-edge drugs to keep the swelling at bay and treat the attacks that break through. Her family relies on food stamps to get by, but the price of just one of Olive McCoy's drugs will be about $600,000 this year. Each week, she injects medicine into her body that's worth more than a year's rent for the tiny bungalow she shares with her husband, Ryan McCoy, and their two children. When Olive McCoy has an attack, the costs for other drugs and care can spiral. She has received hospital bills for more than $1 million. For a time, Olive McCoy couldn't afford or qualify for health insurance. But once her HAE was diagnosed and she was put on a newly approved rare disease drug, she entered a pocket of the healthcare system that drug companies use to ensure that rare disease patients can afford their expensive medicine. Pharmaceutical companies donate to independent charities that cover drug copays and, in some cases, health insurance premiums so that financially needy patients such as Olive McCoy can afford the best healthcare plans and get the treatment they need to survive. Without help from a charity funded by a drug company, Olive McCoy could turn to Medi-Cal, her state's health plan for the poor. But health experts said that Medi-Cal would not automatically cover her specialists and that, crucially, reimbursements to drug firms are typically less generous than with private insurance because Medi-Cal is entitled by law to deep discounts. Some health policy experts and insurance companies argue that charities, a small but critical part of a sprawling U.S. healthcare system, increase sales and shield drug companies from the pressure to lower their prices that might come from publicity about patients unable to afford expensive life-saving medication. Insurers have raised concerns that the charities could be acting in their donors' financial interests. For example, by paying for health plans that pay the drug companies more in reimbursements. The charities say that they operate independently of the drug companies under strict rules meant to prevent kickbacks and do not steer patients into particular health plans. The drug companies defend the charities as a way to ensure that needy patients get drugs they may not otherwise be able to afford and accuse insurers of not providing affordable drug coverage. Patients such as Olive McCoy are extremely valuable to drug companies. Costs of treating rare diseases averaged $140,000 a year in 2016, according to analyst firm Evaluate Pharma. Funding charities that ensure patients get their drugs can quickly pay off. A Citi Research report found that a pharmaceutical company's $1 million donation to a charity for patients with rare diseases can generate up to a $21 million return in drug reimbursements. In Olive McCoy's case, many drug companies contribute to the charity that pays the $955 monthly premium on her private insurance plan. Insurance covers her doctor's visits, hospitalizations, and drugs, while the charity picks up copays and other costs associated with her care. A single bill from March 27 2017 for one of all of McCoy's drugs to treat acute attacks made by the company Shire, a longtime donor to the charity that helps her, illustrates how this investment can pay off. The charity covered $250 for all of McCoy's share of the bill. Insurance paid $85,867 for the drug. If she had been on Medi-Cal, all of McCoy would have had access to all covered medically necessary services and FDA-approved drugs, said Carol Sloan, a spokeswoman for the California Department of Healthcare Services. In practice, however, patients on public insurance often face barriers to getting the drugs they need and the specialists they want, said Benjamin Summers, associate professor of health policy and economics at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. It's more likely the patient actually gets the medication and the drug company is able to get reimbursement for it, and they wouldn't have to get the Medicaid rebate price, he said. Shire said in a statement that it could not comment on reimbursements. The true price of drugs is not publicly available because of secret rebates granted to commercial insurers and Medicaid. All of McCoy's gratitude is clouded by worry that the company-funded charity might end one day. I'm at the mercy of these people. Like right now, they're being kind and they're being generous, but what would happen to make them not be, she said. It's very uncomfortable. It's like there's one part of you where you're grateful and you're so happy. Then there's that anxiety that comes and you're worried. Patients who have less expensive treatments for more common diseases, such as an EpiPen and arthritis drugs, often find companies willing to help. Manufacturers give drugs away, run assistance programs to cover copays for private insurance, or help others, like all of McCoy, by making tax-deductible donations to charities that cover out-of-pocket costs and insurance premiums. But the drug company-funded charities that help maintain high drug prices are most visible with diseases such as HAE, where the needs of a single patient can generate millions in pharmaceutical sales. These patient-assisted charities are supported heavily by companies in their own interest. This is not purely about goodwill, said Stephen Joffe, chief of the Division of Medical Ethics at the University of Pennsylvania Perelman School of Medicine. Joanne DeVries, head of patient services for genetic diseases at Shire, said the company's relationship with charities is limited to financial support. To retain that ethical integrity, Shire and my team are not made aware of how those foundations support those patients, she said. Because HAE is so rare, affecting about 6,500 Americans, it has only recently begun to attract attention from the employers and insurance companies that shoulder most of the cost of the drugs. The annual average cost of medications for an HAE patient was more than $2 million. According to a 2017 report by Express Scripts Holding, a company that manages drug benefits for 83 million Americans. Shire Pharming and CSL Behring make the complex therapies for the genetic condition. The first was approved in the United States in 2008. Drug companies say the prices of their products reflect development costs, future innovation, and the value they bring to patients who have severe diseases and few treatment options. Pharming did not respond to questions about its treatment costs and said it was committed to delivering therapies that make a difference to patients. CSL Behring said in a statement that it works with doctors and payers to make its drugs accessible. We believe that a central part of the ongoing industry discussion around pricing should focus on the value medicines bring to patients, caregivers, physicians, society, and healthcare systems around the world, Shire said in a statement. Before the approval of the first drugs, 30% of HAE patients died of asphyxiation. All of McCoy's life took a sharp turn in 2007 when she injured her hip and knee in an accident at a hospital right before she gave birth to her son, Sekou. The baby was fine, but all of McCoy now uses a cane to walk, deals with chronic pain, and needs a wheelchair when she leaves the house. After the injury, Olive McCoy began to experience alarming facial swelling a few times a week. In one case, her tongue swelled, threatening her ability to breathe and forcing her into the hospital for more than a week. She and her husband, Ryan McCoy, assumed that she just had severe allergies. Between supporting his wife during a slew of medical problems and caring for their two young children, the couple also have a daughter, Alaya, 13, McCoy couldn't keep up with the demands of his information technology job and quit, losing their source of income and his employer-sponsored health insurance. The family moved to Southern California to live with friends. At that time, before the Affordable Care Act became law, Olive McCoy did not qualify for Medi-Cal. She said she was given the option to pay for Medi-Cal about $1,000 per month. The family could barely afford diapers, so Olive McCoy depended on the emergency room for care. She began to ignore calls from collection agents about bills she couldn't even dream of paying. The reality sunk in. This disease, whatever it was, would be part of their lives. A few times a week, Olive McCoy would feel her face or tongue start to swell up. McCoy would pace. Alaya and Sekou would cry and shake. She'd have a swollen tongue and we'd be like, "We're just going to wait this out," McCoy said. We felt kind of like we don't have insurance. We're just going to have to see if we survive. Literally. In 2009, Olive McCoy read a blog written by a woman with a rare condition called hereditary angioedema. She felt a shock of recognition. It was her story. The author connected her with Mark Rydell, a specialist in HAE, who is now based at the University of California at San Diego. Friends helped raise the money to pay for an appointment. With a diagnosis, Olive McCoy gained allies. She attended a conference organized by the U.S. Hereditary Angioedema Association, a patient advocacy group that receives funding from drug companies. Drugs for HAE were just becoming available in the United States, and pharmaceutical companies began inviting Olive McCoy to dinners to learn about them. In 2012, the drug company Shire began giving her medicine free. That same year, Olive McCoy got in contact with Patient Services, Inc., an independently operated charity funded by drug companies, including Shire, to get help with paying for an insurance plan. Olive McCoy had initially heard of PSI at the disease conference. PSI provides help to patients with 15 rare diseases and 11 chronic illnesses. Nearly all of its funding comes from drug companies, 97% in 2016, according to PSI, including three companies that made HAE treatments, Shire, CSL Behring, and Valiant Pharmaceuticals, were donors, according to the charity's 2016 annual report. In 2016, a third of PSI's funding helped pay for insurance premiums, according to PSI. "Absolutely they donate to us, and I would love if they would donate to us out of the goodness of their hearts," said James Romano, PSI's Director of Government Relations. "There's really not the financial benefit that the accusations suggest. There are a lot of manufacturers who don't donate, and their patients are helped just as much." In Olive McCoy's case, PSI paid the premium on a high-risk pool insurance plan run by the state, and once the insurance kicked in, it paid for her drugs. In 2014, as the Affordable Care Act took effect, the charity enabled Olive McCoy to buy a private health plan that more generously covered her specialists and drugs. In addition to Olive McCoy's health insurance, PSI pays for a $75,000 fund for her various medical expenses and $1,000 for travel expenses in 2018. McCoy and the children do not have health insurance. The drug companies also forge financial relationships with doctors and universities and patients such as Olive McCoy. She and her husband were recently flown to Dallas to serve on a patient and caregiver advisory board for farming. They received an honorarium, and Olive McCoy is training to become a paid patient speaker for the company. There's a lot of relationship building and less tangible support, if you will, Jaffe said, and that may play a different function. It's all to support patients to continue to use the drugs, and in some cases, to sort of encourage patients to become advocates for the drugs with other patients so they become ambassadors. Drug companies and the HAE patient advocacy group also have pledged $4.6 million for a research center at the University of California at San Diego. Its clinical director is Rydell, Olive McCoy's physician, who has conducted clinical trials funded by drug companies, including on drugs Olive McCoy takes. I do have, as do my colleagues, a lot of experience. We've spent most of our careers studying and taking care of these patients, and so it's an effort to try to contribute at some level to the advances that are being made, Rydell said. In the family's sparsely furnished bungalow, the big bills that insurance pays on Olive McCoy's behalf seem surreal. $34,000, $68,000, and $86,000 for drugs, hospital bills for $525,000, and $1.2 million. I'm very expensive, Olive McCoy said. By the end of the year, our pharmaceutical bill meds alone can be $1 million, can be $2 million, without even trying. Insurers argue that charities like the one covering Olive McCoy's care may help their drug company donors by steering patients into plans that are more lucrative for the companies. The insurers argue that charities should focus on the financially needy without giving special consideration to patients with rare diseases. People who are eligible for public programs, e.g. Medicare and Medicaid, which may offer additional benefits and services, should not be inappropriately steered into the commercial insurance market to generate greater reimbursement, Christine Groh, a spokesman for America's Health Insurance Plans, wrote in an email. The system of third-party payments, she added, skews the risk pool and imposes higher costs for all consumers. Patients and the charities that help them find those arguments offensive and say the critics don't take into account whether the public health programs would be sufficient for a patient's complicated care. They point out that charities do not choose the patient's drugs or insurance plans. The insurance industry is looking for every way not to cover these people, said Romano of PSI. The charity said in a statement, PSI does not steer patients to choose a specific type of coverage. Rydell said he has concerns about drug prices, too, although he spends much of his time fighting with insurance companies. A lot of my personal frustration on a day-to-day basis is with payers, because at the end of the day, they're standing in the way of patients getting treated, he said. We also spend a lot of time sort of advising, or at least giving unsolicited advice to pharmaceutical companies, that we need to keep costs in mind, because it makes it really difficult for patients to use these medicines when they're so costly and the payers won't approve them. The first independent patient charities were founded by advocates about three decades ago to help patients pay for expensive drugs. They were supposed to be a temporary solution, said Dana Kahn, a hemophilia and HIV patient who founded PSI. PSI is one of nine main charities that receive virtually all of their funding from drug companies. The charities do not fully disclose their donors in line with federal rules. This form of charity has grown explosively, from providing $2.3 million to patients in 2001 to $1.4 billion in 2015, according to an analysis published in Tax Notes, a publication for tax professionals. PSI helped about 500 patients with individual insurance premiums last year. Manufacturers also run their own charities, providing free drugs to people in need, an enterprise that has ballooned from $378 million in 2001 to $6.5 billion in 2015. Experts say the growth of both types of charities stems from the increase in expensive rare disease drugs, the growth of insurance plans that push costs onto patients, and the pharmaceutical industry's realization that it can help patients stem criticism and support sales all at once. This allows the system as we know it to exist. And it allows the prices of these therapies to be so high, said Rena Conti, a health economist at the University of Chicago. Essentially, only when you have patients either dying in the street or complaining they couldn't get their medication, then that creates public pressure. This is essentially a way of neutering that political engagement. The charities receive strict oversight from the Department of Health and Human Services Office of Inspector General. But Maria Harden, who was vice president of patient services at the National Organization for Rare Disorders until 2010, said that charities like NORD had to rebuff pressure from drug companies trying to use them to gather more information about patients than they were allowed under the law. The pharmaceutical companies would like to utilize this as a way of measuring how many pills they're selling. They have very, I don't want to say slick, just ways of ingratiating themselves to the charities, saying, is there any way to let us know how many of our patients taking our drugs are in your program? Harden said, adding that she did not provide that information. They just wanted to find an easy way to extrapolate that information for their marketing. One charity, Caring Voice Coalition, stopped providing funding to patients for a year after the HHS Office of Inspector General found that it had been giving drug company donors patient-specific data that would allow them to figure out how their donations were driving drug sales. Caring Voice Coalition President Greg Smiley said in an email that CVC has tackled past deficiencies head-on. PSI's operating budget dropped 17% this year to $83 million. The Justice Department and documents related to a $35 million settlement reached with Algeron Pharmaceuticals last year alleged that the company had induced purchases of its cholesterol drug under a PSI copay program. The U.S. Attorney's Office for the District of Massachusetts said that PSI promoted its ability to create a reimbursement vehicle in lieu of giving away the drug. PSI denied the DOJ allegations and noted that it was not charged with wrongdoing. PSI is an access and affordability nonprofit charity for insured patients with rare chronic diseases who cannot afford premiums and copayments, who are not eligible for free drugs, who have no other options, and who otherwise would face financial ruin, the charity said in a statement. We are not a health services provider, and we do not set drug prices. The nonprofit organization has been fighting government efforts to restrict its communications with donors and recently sued the U.S. government, alleging that such federal restrictions violate its free speech rights and hurt its ability to help patients. Since this restriction has been put in place, we haven't been able to put in any new programs for publicly insured patients, said Neil Millhiser, general counsel for PSI. For all of McCoy, debates about the ethics of patient charities are a luxury for healthy people. Her family's main concern is keeping her healthy. Around dinner time on Mondays and Thursdays, Alaya reminds her mom to use her numbing cream to ease the pain from the infusion she'll need in a few hours. The girl who loves to draw and giggle with her brother turns serious, preparing the infusion with clinical precision. She snaps the caps off two vials, one full of a powder and the other sterile water, and mixes them with a syringe. Sekou lays out ice packs at the base of the bed and drums them with his hands, while McCoy fixes a hot water bottle for his wife's back. All of McCoy browses for the show they should watch tonight. They finished So You Think You Can Dance, so they move on to Korean dramas. Once the powder is dissolved, Alaya draws the drug back up through the syringe, $5,700 in her hand. Once they're ready and the show is queued up, they snuggle into bed. Alaya attaches the syringe to the medical tubing that will send the drug into her mother's body and slowly begins pressing down a little at a time. We have time now for a shorter article on another rare form of eye cancer that has been detected in two groups and two states, and this comes from CBS News of April 30th, 2018. Researchers want to know what may be causing a rare eye cancer in two states. Ocular melanoma is an extremely rare form of cancer, usually found in just 6 of every 1 million people, but it has been identified in a group of 18 patients in Huntersville, North Carolina, and in a second group in Auburn, Alabama, some of whom were friends who'd attended Auburn University together. Julie Green was diagnosed first at age 27. She saw odd flashes of light. He said, "There's a mass there. There's something there. I don't know what it is, but it looks like it could be, you know, a tumor," Green said. "It's like you had the breath knocked out of you, you know?" In 2001, it was her college friend, Allison Allred, 31 at the time. "I was just seeing some mild flashes of light for, say, 7 to 10 days, Allred said. A doctor told her she had a detached retina, but then he said, "Well, it's detached because there's a 10-millimeter melanoma sitting on it." Both women had to have an eye removed. Then their friend Ashley McCrary found black spots in her iris. It was the same rare cancer. "What's crazy is literally standing there. I was like, well, I know two people who've had this cancer," said McCrary. "And did you understand then how strange that was?" asked CBS News correspondent Anna Werner. No, I didn't." Strange enough that she mentioned it to Dr. Marlana Orloff, the oncologist treating her at the Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Thomas Jefferson University in Philadelphia. "Most people don't know anyone with this disease," said Dr. Orloff. "We said, okay, these girls were in this location. They were all definitively diagnosed with this very rare cancer. What's going on?" Dr. Orloff and her colleagues are now studying these patients, many of whom traveled to Philadelphia for treatment. Another Auburn grad, Lori Lee, kept her eye, but the cancer metastasized to her liver. She now travels from Alabama to Philadelphia every 6 weeks to be treated in a clinical trial. "This is a rare cancer, so it's not like you can just go anywhere and have anybody know anything, really, about it," Lee said. "There is no known cure. Allison Allred's cancer has recurred 9 times in 6 places in her body. 2 days ago, I found out that it's come back to my brain," Allred said. "So I'm actually going to have radiation on my brain tomorrow." Werner asked, "How do you sit there with a smile given everything that you've been through?" "It's totally the Lord that has carried us through every step of it." Thank you for tuning in to Sound Body today. Stay well, and please come back next week for more healthy living ideas. This has been Sound Body, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm Louise Craig, and I hope you'll join me again next week for more health updates and information for healthy living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.